I'm going to read. I said today is Nicodemus Sunday. Talk a little bit about this guy Nicodemus. But I'm first going to read something from the Bible. This is the third chapter of John, and it tells the Nicodemus story. A Pharisee named Nicodemus, a leader in the Jewish community, came to Jesus during the night, and he said, "Rabbi, we know that you've come as a teacher from God. After all, nobody can perform the signs you do unless God is with him." And Jesus replied to him, "Let me tell you this. No one can experience the empire of God without being reborn from above." And Nicodemus says to him, "Well, how can an adult be reborn? Can you re-enter your mother's womb and be born a second time?" And Jesus replied, "Let me tell you this. No one can enter the empire of God without being born of water and spirit. What is born of the human realm is human, but what is born of the spiritual realm is spirit. So don't be surprised that I told you, every one of all y'all must be reborn from above. The spirit blows everywhere, which way, like the wind. You hear the sound it makes, but you can't tell where it's coming from or where it's headed. That's how it is with everyone reborn of the spirit." "Well, how is that possible?" asked Nicodemus. And Jesus replied, "You're a teacher of Israel and you don't understand this? Let me tell you this. We tell what we know and we give evidence about what we've seen, but none of all y'all accepts our evidence. If I tell you about what's earthly and you don't believe, how you believe it if I tell you all about what's heavenly? No one has gone up to heaven except the one who came down from there, the human one. In the desert, Moses elevated the snake. And in the same way, the human one is destined to be elevated, so everyone who believes in him can have unending life. This is how God loved the world. God gave up an only son so that everyone who believes in him will not be lost but have unending life. After all, God sent the son into the world not to condemn the world but to rescue the world through him. Those who believe in him are not condemned. Those who don't believe in him are already condemned. They haven't believed in God's only son. This is the verdict on them. Light came into the world, but people love darkness instead of light. Their actions were evil, weren't they? All those who do evil things hate the light and don't come to the light. Otherwise, their deeds would be exposed. But those who do what's true come into the light, so the nature of their deeds will become evident. Their deeds belong to God." And that's the first encounter of Jesus with Nicodemus. And Nicodemus appears three times in John's gospel. There's this time. And then he comes in again in chapter 7 when Jesus is being hassled. And Nicodemus says, "Since when does our law pass judgment on someone without first letting him speak for himself and without establishing the facts?" Then, right after the crucifixion, Joseph of Arimathea, a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one, has permission to take Jesus' body down from the cross and buries it in a tomb. And Nicodemus comes along with 75 pounds of myrrh and anoints the body, prepares the body for burial. So that's the Nicodemus story, those three accounts. He comes in here with the questions for Jesus at the beginning, and he defends Jesus in the middle, and then he buries Jesus at the end. You might know of Nicodemus. At Christmas, we sing about jolly old Saint Nick, Nicodemus. Nothing else from Nicodemus outside of this story. There is a Gospel of Nicodemus that was made in the 4th or 5th centuries. That's a longer story. It's an apocryphal gospel, but in it again, Nicodemus is kind of, as a hero. He's a defender of the truth. He doesn't like people to be smeared. And so that's kind of his role here. Now Nicodemus is a Pharisee, so he's in the establishment, right? He is the religious establishment, and there's no good or bad on it. It's like clergy, all right? It's the thing. And so that's the establishment that he's in. And so Jesus has a confrontation with him. Now, before I say that, I should say a little bit about the Gospel of John. Probably the Jesus Seminar voted almost all of it black, meaning that they didn't think any of the sayings or deeds of Jesus there went back to Jesus, the historical person. Now, that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that it's an imaginative text that probably was written quite a bit later, and it reflects the disagreements between this Jesus community, this Jewish community that has followed Jesus, and that split that's happened. And so when I kept saying you all in there, that we you all, it's actually plural. So what's happening here is an argument between those guys and us guys. That's the kind of thing that's happening, and it's placed on the lips of Jesus. So there's an argument about authority, right? Who are you, you punk, from Nazareth? Nothing good comes from Nazareth. And you're coming here, you know, doing things and talking about God and all that stuff. And over against, you know, the establishment. But the story about Nicodemus is that Nicodemus is certainly within what we might say the establishment, a leader in the Jewish community. And so, but there's something. This is, and here's the wonderful debate about Nicodemus. This is why he's such a cool character. People don't really know how to take him. Is he like really sincere? Does he end up really getting it? Or is he not? Or is he kind of a curious person? That's why I put question marks for Nicodemus, because I like him, and I get where he is. He's kind of the establishment that sees some radical doing something, and everybody's condemning the radical, but he's saying, you know, I wonder. And so he sneaks off at night to have a chat with him, because he wants to find out if this guy really has something to say. And so, and we've seen you do the stuff. They can't deny that he's been doing, you know, these miracles and doing this amazing teaching. And so he asks him, well, you know, I know you can't do this stuff unless God's with you or with a person who does that. Then Jesus says this really strange phrase, you cannot experience the empire of God without being, now you all have heard this before, born again, right? Remember, anybody heard that phrase? You should be able to see it, you know, in football stadiums. That's where it usually goes up. You know, John 3:16, or you must be born again. And it's great when it says ye must be born again, because you got to have that King James version in there. But the word that is translated in English as again has an ambiguity about it. It can also mean above. So the question is it again or is it above? And Nicodemus hears it probably as again, because he asks kind of a weird question. Well, how can an adult be reborn? Can you re-enter your mother's womb and be born a second time? Nicodemus, man, don't you get a metaphor? But that's kind of how it is with the Gospel of John. You know, it happens that Jesus, the character Jesus, is often speaking on a level that's a little bit above, and people don't quite get him. They take him very literally or take him wrongly, and he has to explain it again to them. So he says, no, I'll tell you this. So Jesus replies, he doesn't really answer Nicodemus' question. He just says, no one can enter the empire of God without being born of water and spirit. What's born of the human realm is human. What's born of the spirit realm is spirit. And so don't be surprised when I tell you must be born from again or above. Well, it makes more sense there if it's above, this spirit realm, whatever that means. You have to have some kind of, how do we say this in modern language? Some kind of identity that is beyond just our simple material ego? How's that? That can't be all of it, but it's at least that, right? That we've got to have an identity for ourselves that's larger than, you know, just who I am, John Chuck, whoever that is. So there's a challenge to be, who are you? What are your values? That's the challenge of this question, I think, that's coming to not only the person Nicodemus, but Nicodemus as he represents the established religious authorities. If you really could see the truth, you would. We show you this evidence, Jesus says, but you don't look at it. A person, so it concludes Jesus, must have some kind of born from above, whatever that means, must tap into a higher awareness, a deeper awareness of who he or she is. Help me out. I cannot answer this question. Does anybody have an answer for that? What does it mean to be born from above? Because I have not been able to figure this out for years. Pat has the answer.
I feel like the older I get, the more I am simply a vessel, and the Spirit of God works through me more and more each day.
The older I get, I am more like a vessel, and the Spirit of God moves within me every day. That's beautiful. That's a part of being born from above, isn't it? It's recognizing that my identity is not necessarily within all of my body and all of its stuff, that there's a deeper part. Others thought born from above? Yeah, there we go. See, what's great. The great thing is when you don't write out a sermon.
I always hear that story in the context of a world where how you were born physically meant everything.
Okay.
It was your total identity as put your position in society and your wealth. And here's a wealthy guy, he's really going to value his human birth, right? So Jesus says, it doesn't mean anything. You got to do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. There's Dick. All right. Born from above, Dick. Or again.
Through all of the people that I've met through my life, beginning with my parents, who gave me what education they could, beginning with my teachers that involved a sense of mystery and questioning. In other words, born from above means being born with other people.
All right, thank you. Born with other people, good. I'm thinking of a Buddhist term that talks about having a beginner's mind. The beginner's mind is being able to recognize that we think we know a lot of stuff, and we do, but it isn't everything that there is that we could know. And you have to kind of clean that out. Start over. Begin again. Be open to what you experience, the world, the life, other people, with a beginner's mind, starting over again. And that's why I kind of like the born again part, because that kind of covers that as well as the above. But there's an aspect, I think, when Jesus is challenging Nicodemus, or if we read it, John's community is challenging the established authorities. Seek an identity with a beginner's mind. Seek to be able to explore truths that you're afraid to touch. And I think that's what we find within the Gospel of John. And so Nicodemus comes in, and we don't, and that's it. That's all we hear from him. He represents the leadership who's curious, who doesn't automatically condemn or go with the crowd, but instead seeks to find out for himself. So he comes at night, which is a marvelous metaphor, to experience what might be the light. Then the second appearance of Nicodemus is in chapter 7. Okay, the crowd split over who Jesus is, but they don't like him. Some were in favor of arresting him. All right, he's just too much trouble. But no one laid a hand on him. Then the temple police came back to the chief priests and the Pharisees, who said to them, "Well, why haven't you brought him in?" And the police answered, "Well, no one ever talked quite like that before." And the Pharisees came back at them, "Don't tell us you've been duped too. None of the authorities or the Pharisees have believed in them, have they?" Remember, they're coming from their authority. Hey, the church doesn't believe this guy. The church says this or whatever, so it must be right. And as for this mob, well, they're ignorant of the law. Then Nicodemus, who was one of their number, he had earlier paid Jesus a visit, as we recall, at night. He says, "Since when does our law pass judgment on someone without first letting him speak for himself and without establishing the facts?" Which is a pretty reasonable thing to say. Anybody ever heard of a smear campaign? A song event mentioned Martin Luther King. You know what Martin Luther King was called most often? Guess. Communist. He's a communist. So you don't have to listen to anything he says because he's a communist. And that was the great charge in the 50s and 60s. Of communism. You can find if you find a label that no one wants to be or be associated with or have any link to, just call that person that. You don't have to have any argument at all. And people will, out of fear, out of darkness, will go into that. And then, of course, it continued on. And they shot back. These are the Pharisees shooting back to Nicodemus, right? Nicodemus is the Pharisee. He's the guy who stood out from the crowd, stood out from the establishment, and says, "Wait a second, shouldn't we hear this person out?" And they shoot back at him, and they say, "You wouldn't be from Galilee too, would you? Check for yourself. No prophet's born from Galilee. Remember the whole Galilee, Nazareth thing? Nobody's any good from that place. You're from there. You don't have anything to say to us. I mean, after all, I went to Princeton. Where'd you go? Right? That's the theme. So that's, and I like Nicodemus. I just am proud of someone, regardless, who stepped out of the system and said, I know everybody's saying this about you. I don't know. Tell me what you are saying yourself. And I think that is probably one of the best ethical statements one can make. And then we move to the end. And Jesus dies. Now, the historical, John Dominic Crossan said that Jesus probably never really was buried. That people who were executed by crucifixion, generally that were just kind of left there and they took the bodies down. It was very non-ceremonial. The wild dogs ate him, is what Crossan said, because that's just generally what happened to all those people. But John has a story, and the Gospels preserve a story of Jesus being buried, being taken from the cross, and Joseph of Arimathea does it, and Nicodemus goes along with him, and they're obviously fairly wealthy. It says that about Joseph of Arimathea. I mean, buying 75 pounds of myrrh and aloes, how much is that? I mean, that's got to be a chunk of change, right? So he is bringing probably the highest respect you can have for the dead, for a friend, for someone who's been humiliated and murdered and executed, and so he buries him. And that's really the end that we hear of this amazing person, Nicodemus. He doesn't appear in any other biblical account, but he appears in three important times for the Christian faith. The whole story of being born again and the famous passage of God so loved the world that God gave his only son and so forth, that passage is all from this Nicodemus dialogue. Then Nicodemus is the one who steps out from the crowd and defends Jesus when he is attacked by simply just saying, let the guy speak for himself. And then at the end, he honors his life by giving him an honorable burial. So Nicodemus gets sainthood, Saint Nicodemus. Thoughts? I'm going to leave it with you. Last word. Anybody? What do you think about this? Have you seen this in life? Does this make sense? And I'm thinking, I'm going back to that middle part of the smearing thing. I experienced this over the weekend, and I've experienced it throughout before, having to try to, people get attacked, and they just get labeled. And it's like this. If I'm against burning witches, that doesn't necessarily follow that I am a witch. And I think that's a really important thing. And I'm thinking now, I'm just going to say, as we move into a time of, it's this kind of a scary time and a polarizing time, and we're getting together and getting not together. We're going to do the opposite of getting together. We're making our own little silos. And I think it's important for us to be able to step out of our silo and risk being condemned by our own people that we thought were are on our team and step out and say, what is really going on? Can I hear this person's voice? And I think that is critically important for all of us. I'm not even talking about any kind of specific thing. I'm speaking in general, but I'm speaking about that part of us as a culture. I'm thinking of our neighbors across the street and as from the mosque, and the rising Islamophobia that has generated since 9/11, but since before that and after that, but especially since then. And it's very difficult for, I think, us to be able to objectively kind of step out and hear a point of view that challenges what the establishment has been saying all along. And I'm not getting any further than that except to say that, and that's why I'm celebrating Nicodemus today and having his spirit be channeled into my heart. Amen.
And recognize that there are times